Morning, I'm reading from 2 Chronicles, chapter 18, verse 1 to 27 from the Message, and it's an abridged version of it. Jehoshaphat was rich and honored, but he made a marriage alliance with Ahab of Israel. He paid a visit to Ahab at Samaria, and Ahab celebrated his visit with a huge feast. Ahab said openly, "Will you join me in attacking Ramoth Gilead?" Jehoshaphat said, "You bet, I'm with you all the way, but before we do anything, ask God for guidance." The king of Israel got the prophets together, all 400 of them, and put the question to them, "Should I attack Ramoth Gilead, or should I hold back?" "Go for it," they said. "God will hand it over to the king." But Jehoshaphat dragged his feet. "Is there another prophet of God around here we can consult? Let's get a second opinion." The king of Israel told Jehoshaphat, "There is another, but I hate him. He never preaches anything good to me, only doom, doom, doom." Micaiah of Imlah is who he is. "The king shouldn't talk about a prophet like that," said Jehoshaphat. So the king of Israel ordered one of his men, "Quickly, get Micaiah the prophet." With the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat seated on their thrones, all the prophets were staging a prophecy performance for their benefit. All the prophets chimed together, "Yes, go for Ramoth Gilead and easier victory, God's gift to the king." The messenger who went to get Micaiah told him, "The prophets have all said yes to the king. Make it unanimous. Vote yes." But Micaiah said, "As sure as God lives, what God says, I'll say." With Micaiah before him, the king asked him, "So, Micaiah, do we attack Ramoth Gilead or do we hold back?" "Go ahead," he said, "an easy victory, God's gift to the king." "Not so fast," said the king. "How many times have I made you promise under oath to tell me the truth and nothing but the truth?" "All right," said Micaiah, "since you insist. I saw all of Israel scattered over the hills, sheep with no shepherd. God spoke, 'These poor people have no one to tell them what to do. Let them go home and do the best they can for themselves.'" The king of Israel turned to Jehoshaphat. "See, what did I tell you? He never has a good word for me from God, only doom." Micaiah kept on, "I'm not done yet. Listen to God's word. I saw God enthroned and all the angel armies of heaven standing in attention, ranged on his right and his left. And God said, 'How can we seduce Ahab to attack Ramoth Gilead and going to his death?' A bold angel stepped out and said, 'I'll seduce him.' 'And how will you do it?' said God." 'Easy,' said the angel. 'I'll get all the prophets to lie.' 'That should do it,' said God. 'On your way, seduce him.' And that's what happened. God filled the mouths of your puppet prophets with seductive lies. God has pronounced your doom," said Micaiah. The king of Israel had heard enough. "Get Micaiah out of here. Turn him over to Ahimaaz, the city magistrate, with this message. King's orders. Lock him up in jail. Keep him on bread and water until I'm back in one piece." "If you ever get back in one piece, that is," Micaiah replied.
Thank you, William. So we just go for a blank slide there, please. Ben, that's lovely. So, just park that reading for a moment. Just going to ask a couple of questions. Have you ever bought something, gone to a shop, bought something, maybe something significant? I don't know, maybe you bought a flashy iPhone or something, and then got home and then started to justify the purchase. Ever done that? Or, different scenario, have you ever needed to get some wisdom, get some advice, and so you thought, I know, I'll ask my friends, you know, good counsellors, and you've gone around asking your friends, what should you do? But be honest, take a step back. In reality, were you going round your friends until you came upon a friend who told you what you wanted to hear all along? Ever done that? Probably in this room, there are people who have done either one or the other. Probably some people have done both. Let's be honest. I mean, when it comes to buying stuff, the first lesson, if you're going to be a salesperson, the first lesson is people buy for emotional reasons, and then they justify it rationally later. See, what goes on in here, our emotions, the stuff in our core of our life, has a big bearing on what we want to do, on what we want to decide to do. It matters. It affects us deeply. So when we say we are followers of Jesus and we're trying to follow Jesus, are we actually able to do that, or actually are we swayed by the emotions and the stuff deep within? Do those other factors actually win the day? So, to the story, we heard King Jehoshaphat of Judah. He aligns himself with King Ahab of Israel. They form an alliance, they intermarry, and they have this alliance relationship. The problem is, Ahab is not interested in God, to say the least. He's actually a bit of a nasty piece of work and going far, far from God. Now, Jehoshaphat goes to Ahab and he throws this wonderful feast. But Ahab wants to go to war. And he wants to go against this place, Ramoth-Gilead. And he wants Jehoshaphat and Judah and his armies to go with him. Fortunately, Jehoshaphat is sensible enough to say, well, we can do this, we've got the armies, but shouldn't we ask God for guidance first? So Ahab says, we can do that. He gathers together his prophets. He's got 400 of them. And he gathers them all together to say, tell me, should we go to war? And to a man, all 400 of these prophets all say the same thing. Yes, you will be victorious. Go and fight this war. And some do it with plain words, some are more theatrical, but they're all basically saying the same thing. Yes, King Ahab, you'll be successful, go and do it. The cynical among us can't help but thinking, aren't all these people just telling Ahab what he wants to hear? Now, this event was from some 2,600 years ago. But I think, actually, we do have a digital photograph that shows us what this episode was kind of like, which we'll have on the screen now. Oh, no, not that one. Okay, we'll move on to the next picture, please. Move on to the next blank. Sorry, thank you. Jehoshaphat pauses and senses that something isn't quite right. And he asks, isn't there a prophet of the Lord that we can consult? See, Jehoshaphat is sensible enough to realize that there's a difference between people who talk spiritually and people who are genuinely seeking the guidance of God. There's a difference between the two. We would do really well to learn that difference. People can talk spiritually, they can talk spiritual stuff, but that doesn't automatically mean they are genuinely seeking God for his guidance. So they call for this chap Micaiah. And Ahab's not keen on him because he knows from past experience that Micaiah has never got anything positive or good to say to the dodgy king Ahab. There's a bit of a clue there, isn't there, about that. But he calls him anyway. And it's a bit awkward because along the way, Micaiah says to the servant who's gone to fetch him, he says, I can only tell what God gives me to tell to the king. But then he goes before the king and the king asks the question, should we go to the war? And at first, Micaiah says, yes, of course, go and be victorious. But Ahab can see through that. Ahab says, now, Micaiah, you're being flippant, aren't you? How many times have I told you, only tell me what God is saying? And so then Micaiah lets him have it, both barrels, so to speak, and gives this message, you are heading for disaster. Micaiah does something vitally important. He speaks truth to power. Now, if you remember only one thing from this morning, remember this. Sometimes someone needs to speak truth to power. And that is prophecy at its most courageous, but also its most dangerous. I mean, it's costly for Micaiah because Ahab says, right, well, put him in prison until I get back. Because Micaiah knows that Ahab is not coming back. He's going to go to war and he's going to meet his end. So Micaiah is going to be in prison for a very long time. It's costly speaking truth to power. We have an image for that, which we'll leave on the screen. Those of us who are old enough will remember this is Tiananmen Square in the late 80s, speaking up against the oppression of students and the oppression of democracy. And this lone student stood in front of a tank. Some of us will remember that from the late 80s. But it's the deal. Another contemporary example from the last 100 years is Second World War. German pastor Dietrich Bonhoeffer was safely in a church in South London, but he knew that he had to go and speak back against what the Nazi regime were doing. He knew he couldn't let that stand unopposed. And so he moved back from the safety of South London to Berlin to start an underground theological college to say, look, what is going on here is wrong, and spoke truth to power. It cost him his life. He was arrested and executed. But now the story in Jehoshaphat and Ahab gives us some real headaches. So homework, go home and read 2 Chronicles chapter 18 yourself and wrestle with this reality that in Micaiah's vision, he sees God and the heavenly hosts, and there's this discussion going on, and God's saying, who will entice Ahab to go into this war and meet his ends? Now, that's problematic. You know, that leaves us scratching our head. That raises big theological questions. And then there's these kind of different angels and spirits, and one says, "Go, I'll go and I'll be a lying spirit, and that way I'll get these dodgy prophets to lie and to deceive." And God seems to approve of this plan. So again, big theological questions. How do we kind of make sense of that? Well, you're going to have to wrestle with that yourself. We haven't got time to unpack all that here. But I will give you a theory. And this is just a theory. This is not the result of masses of scholarly learning and stuff. It's Carl's theory on this, number one. I believe there are times where God sees the corruption of an individual's heart, or maybe sometimes the corruption in a whole nation, and somehow linked with the fact that God gives free will, which is a whole big subject in itself of how that actually works, God allows people to follow their dodgy course. He gives them over to their course, even though knowing that this is not going to turn out well. And we see a sense of that. And when Paul writes to the Romans in chapter 1, he's making very, very broad, sweeping statements here about pretty much the whole of the world's population. But he says God gave them over to their ways. There are times when God says, oh, this is not going to be good, but that's the way you want to go. Okay, let's let that unfold. Gives them over. Because hopefully we're thinking, well, we would never want to be in that kind of scenario where we're going down this wrong track and people or God or others are letting us go down this wrong track and making these big mistakes. No, we would want to be on God's track, on God's true north of following him. So if we want to avoid ourselves finding ourselves on that wrong track, we need to keep checking and rechecking our hearts to ensure that we align with the true north of God's direction. And that's a lifetime exercise. We can't just do that once and then we'll be okay for the rest of our life. We have to check and recheck and recheck over the course of our whole lives. I mean, we know, don't we, that a navigation compass, you know, the little round thing with a little needle, and it lines up with the Earth's magnetic field, and it shows you the magnetic north, doesn't it? If you've ever done orienteering or been for a long hike and done the good old map and compass navigation, it shows you magnetic north, and that's what you use to guide you, set the bearings. But we know, don't we, that get a magnet or maybe even just an iron bar and bring it near the compass, what happens to the needle? It deflects. So how many things are there in this world, in and around our lives, that are capable of coming near and causing the needle in our hearts to deflect? And that's why we have to keep checking and rechecking that we are actually aligned with God's true north. So we have different habits that we talk about as a church, and one of them is ever closer to Jesus. And that's all about saying, I'm just going to check, I'm just going to make sure that actually I am still aligned with Jesus and his direction. And so we have to ask ourselves a question. And we've got a key question that's going to come up, please, Ben. Am I open to God's direction? Or in truth, will I only set about my thing? A bit like that person who's asking for guidance, but the reality is they're just waiting to come across a friend who's going to tell them what they wanted to hear in the first place. Or actually, are you flexible enough to change direction because you realize that what you were set on was your thing rather than God's thing? But you can also flip that question around. We can take it as, are we flexible enough to realize that we're going in the wrong direction and go elsewhere? but also flip it around. Maybe we have a thing that is really good. It's in the sweet spot of our gifting and our calling, and we love doing that thing. And it is a God thing. It is really good. But maybe in the bigger purposes of God, in the bigger purposes of his church or even churches working together, it would be great for you to contribute your time and energy to that bigger thing, even though it's not in the sweet spot of your thing. Are you flexible enough to see that and take that on board and contribute your energy? I say that because, I mean, over my years, I know Christians who are wonderful, great Christians. But they will only ever contribute their time and energy to their thing. Even though when in the bigger picture of what church or churches are doing, it would be useful for them to contribute their energy to this bigger work. It doesn't quite match their sweet spot, but it would be useful if they kind of mucked in with the rest. But they won't, because it's not their thing. I've seen that. So it works both ways, this question. Are we open to God redirecting us when we're getting it wrong? Are we open to God nudging us to say, get involved with that? It's not the thing you normally do, but actually it will contribute to the bigger purpose. And so is it about your north or is it about God's north with your direction? So the challenge is that will come up. Thank you, Ben. Lay down your plans and your preferences before God again and again. If God is in it, then once you've laid it down, he will find a way of picking it back up again and giving you new energy and new impetus to go with it. But we have to be prepared to lay stuff down. And sometimes that's painful. But if God is genuinely in it, if it's actually aligned with the true north of God's direction, he will find a way of picking it back up and getting you up and running again. Every major initiative that we have taken as a church over the past 10 years, we have not rushed into. It has taken time, sometimes months, sometimes measured in years, because we realize the process of laying it down, but then see God bring it back and giving it new energy, laying it down again, just in case we're actually just rushing into our thing, our idea. Lay it down, but then let God pick it back up. Because if it's of him, he will provide the way and the energy. Remember that the practical action on the ground relates, or it certainly should relate, to what is going on with God in the heavenlies. The two should connect. That there's stuff going on in the heavenlies and there's stuff, the physical actions that we and other people are taking. Remember that vision that Micaiah has. I saw God in the heavenlies having this conference and this discussion about what is going to happen on the grounds. And remember this, and this is vitally important in our day, that there is battle and conflict in the heavenlies. What's going on in the heavenlies isn't all good. There are outright lying spirits, deceiving spirits that don't want to do God's stuff, but want to wreck God's stuff. And so there is this battle going on. Vitally important that we remember that in our day with actual war on earth in our continents. And in response to that, we have to continually empty ourselves of self. We have to continually put ourself, which is perfectly capable of being corrupt and messed up and going in the wrong direction and getting things wrong, we have to empty ourselves of that in order to find God's true north. The technical Greek word is kenosis, which is exactly what Jesus did when he left the heavenlies to come and be born a baby physically in a stable. Kenosis, emptying himself. We have to do the same. But it's only by emptying ourselves that enables us to stand in his heavenly armor, his heavenly way, to go with God's way into the turmoil of the world. But let's remember that for us as followers of Jesus, when we are aligned with God's true north, the conflict in our eyes is never with people. It's not with Russians, or it's not with such and such a people, or the Chinese, or if we're talking of different world religions, it's not with Muslims. Because our conflict as followers of Jesus is never with people. It's in the heavenlies. I've heard people say to me, talking on religious persecution and difficulty, maybe in the Middle East or whatever, I've heard people say, oh, well, the Muslims, they're the enemy. And I want to say, we don't use that language. Because our conflict is never with people. It is in the heavenlies. And we have to empty ourselves of all the stuff that comes up with emotion and stuff when we watch the news or whatever. We have to empty ourselves to stand with Christ in his heavenly armor and his heavenly way. To stand up for peace and to bring things round as to how God would have them in our lives, in our place, in our city, on the geopolitical worldwide scale. Because in all these situations, ultimately, we can always say one thing: the battle belongs to the Lord. And we need to learn to be about that battle in his way. And standing in the armor and the demeanor and the attitude that he gives. I'm going to ask the musicians to take the place. Why don't we stand together and pray for a moment. Stand if you're able, at least. And we're going to pray, and then we're going to sing a song. It's actually an old song. We're really going retro today. This song came out just as I was actually in the era that I became a Christian. So it really dates it back. But it's all about the heavenly battle and standing in him. But Lord, help us to be about you and what you are achieving. Lord, we pray on earth as it is in heaven. We pray that for a reason. One, because you taught us to use those words, but also, secondly, because the battle is yours. And you are rearranging stuff and fighting and ensuring that the heavenlies is sorted out so that here on earth things can come right and be sorted out. May we now stand in you and participate and take part in that.